Hello, hello, everyone. Gonna change my name. We'll wait for folks to start trickling in, which is so exciting. Got 3 minutes. So as you all trickle in, you know the drill. I wanna hear from you, where you're from, where you'll be joining us today. So excited to have you all here. Just to orient you with how this call is gonna work, if you have a question that you don't want me to miss, you absolutely want me to see it, put it in the Q&A box, not in the chat box, in the Q&A box, so I don't miss it. The chat goes by really fast once we get going here, so it's hard for me to keep track of questions there. So if you have a question, put it in the Q&A box. If you want to be coached live today, go ahead and raise your hand, and I will be calling on those folks. Okay, let's see, where do we come? Oh my gosh, y'all are coming in. We got Nova Scotia, Virginia Beach, Norway, Dallas, North Carolina, Minneapolis, San Francisco, Ohio. Oh my gosh, y'all, we got No BS women from all over. Cali again in the house, Los Angeles, Alberta, York, Pennsylvania, Alaska, Colorado. Hello, hello. Represent. Hello, everyone. Oh my gosh, this is so fun. We got New Orleans, Mississippi. Oh, I love it when you call, come in. Rhode Island, Illinois. So good. One more minute and then we'll get underway. Again, just one more time as people trickle in. Let's say this at regular intervals. If you have a question you don't want me to miss, pop it in the Q&A box. If you just chatting away, you can be in the chat box. If you want to get coached live, raise your hand, raise your hand. So, all right, one more minute. We'll wait for more people to populate in. Sometimes Zoom is kind of funny. It'll like lag and then there's a burst. So excited for you all to be here tonight, today, depending on what time zone you're in. For some of you, it is the ass crack of dawn right now and you are still joining us. So love the commitment level. Okay, so good. All right, I'm gonna make sure actually my mic is set up correctly as well. All right, cool, we're on the correct setting now and we are at the top of the hour, so I'm gonna go ahead and get underway. I'm Judith Gatton. I am your resident style coach for the last month. We are working we are all collectively working our way through how to be a fucking lady. So excited that I get to teach you all lessons from the book. And today we're going to talk about conversation. And I'm going to teach you about conversation, about when to shut your glam hole, and how those two things ended up in the same chapter. And then, as always, I'm going to give you a practical framework. I'm going to give you a glam gal mission. And then we are going to deep dive into coaching. Again, super delighted to be here. Okay, now here we go. In terms of conversation, when I was creating the book, one of the main goals I had was to take vintage charm school etiquette concepts like elocution and deportment, which is a fancy way of saying how you talk, how you stand, how you carry yourself. And I wanted to, when I say, kind of throw some juice on them. I wanted to modernize and update the advice that was given while also recognizing there was so much to be gained from the past. Vintage style, not vintage values. I wanted to honor all this great wisdom and advice that we'd been given from all these amazing women, women in my family, women who wrote these etiquette books and took the time to try and educate the next generation. I wanted to honor the legacy of them trying to help women become more of a fucking lady. They may not have said it that way, but I totally do. Here's where things get a little problematic. For most of women's history, we had very little voice. For more recent history, like in the last 50 years, we were only allowed to recent history and modern history have a bank account, get a credit card in our own name, even own property or own a business all by ourselves. This is a recent phenomena. So while I want to honor all those beautiful, wise words we get from the past, I also want to turn them on their head.
And I think one of the most beautiful reasons why I love to teach women how to become a fucking lady is because ultimately, I believe that confident women change the world. And one of the most beautiful ways that you can affect change in the world is using your voice. It is a superhuman, amazing fucking tool that you have that generations of women before you did not have the pleasure of wielding or using. That is unique to this moment in time, this moment in history. How amazing and how beautiful. For those of you who sometimes say, maybe I was born in the wrong era. No, you were born in the perfect one. You are going to have a voice. You now have a seat at the table that was pre-warmed by millions of women who have gone before you. Which is why I love to talk about conversation, using that as the overall framework and context. Because what I'm going to say to you, I want you to honor this beautiful gift you've been given, that you have a voice that can be heard and platforms unlike any other in human history to voice your concerns, voice your opinion. It's fucking magic, y'all. And then also learning when to be silent and using your voice effectively and being silent in almost a way that's like strategic. This is something I've taught to lots of young attorneys, what I call baby attorneys, and it's no diss to them, but you come out of school with a certain set of knowledge, and then there's a whole other kind of knowledge and wisdom that you need dropped on you. And oftentimes, I mean, very rarely are we sat down and taught how to communicate effectively with other humans and then when to just shut the hell up. And we need both. Because confident women change the world, and one of the most powerful tools you have in your arsenal is your voice. So I'm going to talk to you about a definition of conversation is a courtesy. Conversation as a courtesy. This is one of the brilliant things that I got from a 1940s etiquette book. There's an entire chapter dedicated to this topic. And I was like so intrigued by this chapter topic that I was like, I have to take this. What is she saying? This is so good. But true to form in like all vintage etiquette books, a lot of it was about calming down your voice, toning down your voice so as not to offend the other people in the room. That's not what I'm talking about when I say conversation is a courtesy. In fact, I want you to know that there are four parts to every conversation. Four parts. There are four things going on in an instasecond, a nanosecond, if you will. And it's good to know what these four parts are so you can understand why conversation is a courtesy. There's what you say, what you mean, what the other person heard, and what they made it mean. This happens in a freaking instant, y'all. It's amazing. What you said, what you meant, what they heard, what they made it mean. You only have control over two of the four. Now, I think a lot of us are under the wrong impression that somehow we are in charge of what other people think and what they make it mean. That's not how it works. You actually only have control over what you say and what you meant. Which is kind of good to know. Because I think so much of our communication oftentimes is to prove ourselves right, to prove the other person wrong, to make our point, to convince, to manipulate. That's actually out of our hands. If you think about the think, feel, do model, what you think and how you feel and what you do, totally under your control. When you say words and it comes into somebody else's brain through their ears, they get to decide what they think of it, how they feel about it, and what they're going to do with it. You have control over here. You got none over here, my boo-boo. As much as you might want to be all up in the biz over here in someone else's think, feel, do model, not how it works. The beautiful thing is you have so much control over here, and this is where I want you to get all up in the goodness. You have total control over what comes out of your mouth. I know sometimes we think like we don't, and for a few of us who get maybe our nervous prattlers and we fill in the silence because we get diarrhea of the mouth, you know, you have way more control than you think. When we use the phrase conversation as a courtesy, and we think of it as a concept, then conversation is no longer about trying to one-up the other person and story steal. It's no longer trying to convince the other person, change their mind, change their thoughts, manipulate them, prove yourself right, prove yourself wrong. No, it's about effectively communicating a thought or idea to another human and doing so with the reminder that you only have so much control in that interaction. What you actually say and what you mean. It's the only things under your control. When conversation is a courtesy, we're trying to effectively communicate a thought or idea, and it stops being about whether you're right or wrong or whether the other person is right or wrong. It means that you can go back to a conversation that you've had that you've couched as difficult, strenuous, where there was a miscommunication, diagram that sucker out and be like, what went on here? The negotiation that you had at work, what happened there? Like when things broke down and you lost your leverage in the interaction, what went on there? When you're having a conversation with your significant other, your spouse, your partner about money or sex, things that are typically fraught and things seem to have like exploded or broken down and you're like, I have no fucking clue what happened. We go to the diagram. What did you actually say? What did you actually mean? Because okay. Well, those are the words you actually said. But if the undercurrent, what you actually meant was you can fuck right off. Well, yeah, maybe there was a miscommunication, right? It's you taking responsibility for the words that fly out of your mouth. This is so freaking powerful, y'all. When you start to think in these terms, and what I want to caution you all is, at first, you're going to be going back and reflecting on old conversations. Eventually, over time, you'll be able to do this in real time and in a split second. But I don't, again, monkey bars, right? We don't want you to jump all the way to the end. You're going to hurt yourself. You're not ready. But diagramming after the fact is super powerful because then you take responsibility for your shit. You take ownership for the shit you said, what you actually meant when you get real, real. And then you can start to change the dynamic in a lot of your relationships. You can show up with more confidence because you can trust yourself with the words that you actually speak. It's powerful. Now, here I want to switch gears to, I'm seeing in the chat, it's conversation is a courtesy, but conversation is a currency. And that's also a thing. I love that you brought that up. So here's where I want to switch gears because I find that some of you are really effective communicators. You love to talk. You're extroverted. That's how you call yourself. You have no problem. But you might have the opposite problem, which is you're filling in the silence with words when you could fill in the silence with your mere presence. You heard me. There's something palpably different about you showing up to a conversation where you strategically are silent. You allow the other person to feel your presence without you having to say a damn thing. Pretty good stuff, right? I taught this to baby attorneys. I did negotiations for 7- and 8-figure deals, really, really big, you know, insurance claims, etc. And one of the things I learned very early on as a baby attorney myself was I always lost my leverage. The negotiation didn't go exactly the way I wanted it to. The court appearance kind of took a weird turn. And when I went back and I started to reflect on it, it was every time I started to run my mouth when I didn't need to. In fact, one of my first solo trials by myself was a huge contract claim. One partner had forged the signature of another. This trial went on for several weeks, and I had this amazing witness lined up. And I mean, I was bringing it, y'all. I was asking the questions, doing the thing, boom, 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 boom. And the judge stops me at one point. He goes, counsel, come to the bench, just you by yourself, which is a little unheard of and kind of inappropriate. So I go to the bench. And I'm like, what I do, Your Honor, like a baby attorney, right? So I'm terrified. He's like, no one to hold him, no one to fold him, and no one to walk away. And essentially, shorthand, he was like, shut the fuck up. You already won. You don't need to talk anymore. You're actually losing the leverage you had and the hold you had on this courtroom by running your mouth. Stop talking. There's another judge that I really admire, and he says, he who speaks first loses. Oftentimes, we're just trying to fill in the silence because of our own nervousness. But you have to remember, the other person can't feel how nervous you are. Remember, they can't feel the feelings in your thought-feel-do cycle. They have their own thoughts and feelings and actions running, right? You have yours. You don't have control over theirs, and you have no way of knowing whether they can feel your anxiousness or nervousness. You start running your mouth, they'll totally know. So what I want to invite you all into as part of your Glam Gal mission this week, when we talk about conversation as a courtesy and communicating effectively, remember that conversation is about communicating effectively for the other person. Conversation is making sure that your voice is heard, because that is a superpower that you have as a confident, no BS woman. Use it, wield it like the fine-edged sword that it is. And for those of you who are like, I love to talk, your Glam Gal mission is to strategically be silent. Don't fill in the silence with prattling. Get still, get quiet, get confident, get grounded, and let someone feel your presence. No additional words needed. Let them be the first to speak. And then, because you're so calm and grounded, you know how to respond rather than react. Now, there's another beautiful worksheet that was created by the amazing Yasmin, who created this workbook for all of us, the How to Be a Fucking Lady workbook. And in it is an entire social interaction plan. And I'm sort of leaving this after talking to you about conversation as a courtesy and strategic silence, because a lot of you, and I've been seeing you on Facebook, which is so amazing, you're going out on dates. You're like going out and you're interacting with the other humans, which is so amazing. Some of you maybe have not forayed out yet. You might be a little nervous. Some of you might be returning back to the office after working from home. Some of you are wanting to show up to Zoom rooms with more exuberance and like owning the whole screen, right? So this is a four-part plan to help you have a more stylish, a little more smooth social interaction. Number one, I want you to pregame. That does not mean liquid courage. Does not mean getting high. That is not what I'm referring to when I say pregame. What I want you to do by pregaming is set the feeling that you want to enter into this social interaction with. You can set the feeling by music, one of my favorite ways to set the mood. In fact, I gave you one of my two top playlists as part of the How to Be a Fucking Lady series. If you go to that page that the No BS team created, there's one that has no cussing. It's a little more vintage-esque. And the other one definitely has cussing, and it's like pop that booty kind of music. So depending on the mood you want to set, you have those options available to you. You could also pick a favorite song of your own. But the idea is to drop into a feeling state that you're choosing on purpose before you enter the Zoom room, the in-real-life room, whatever the situation is. If you're not into music, which sometimes I hear, sometimes I hear that, you can do it with your sense of smell. Pick a perfume that you love, a candle that you love. Sometimes, and I heard this and I was like, this can't be a thing, but it kind of actually works. You can pick what would be considered a more masculine scent and use a cologne instead and rub a little bit under your nose to help set the tone. Raise your testosterone level a little bit. I'll leave that there. If that works for you, it's just a hot tip. Now, the second part of it is to outfit plan. Have a plan A and have a plan B. Sometimes plan A doesn't work out. Our period comes out of nowhere. We're a little more bloated. So those hot pants we had originally planned, they may not work out. That's why we have a go-to outfit, plan B, already stacked in the arsenal, ready to roll, so that our social interaction pregame plan is smooth sailing. Third, I want you to have a conversation plan. whether you're in an office environment, you're going out on a date, or, you know, you're with family and you're still feeling a little anxious about it. Totally okay. Figure out at least two questions that you want to ask beforehand and make it something open-ended, something better than a yes or no response is required. Invite narrative. Invite people to actually talk to you. Instead of saying, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Totally different question. If people are like, I'm fine, be like, no, but like, how are you feeling? You can be that lady. Totally fine. Another way is like, what's an interesting thing that's come across your desk this week? What big dream do you have that you want to work through? Maybe I can help you brainstorm. Invite narrative. Open-ended questions. At least two. It's amazing. And last, and this is really important, plan to have a timeout. So many ladies that I've walked through some form of social interaction plan, we're getting ready for a big meeting, a conference, or even just a date that they haven't gone on in a while, they get a little nervous and they need a timeout. And instead of taking the timeout that they need and planning for it in advance, they decide to shame themselves that they need to take a little bit longer in the bathroom. They decide to beat themselves up if they just needed a freaking minute. None of that's going to go on here because you're going to plan strategically in advance that sometime during the social interaction, you might need to peace out just for a minute, even just a minute. Go to the bathroom and get grounded. Turn off your Zoom camera, mute yourself, get grounded. So good, so easy. And there's no reason to shame yourself if you decide to do this because remember, you already planned for it. My husband's on the spectrum. So oftentimes if we have to go to anywhere there's going to be large crowds, we bring the noise canceling headphones and we plan strategically like certain places. We're just going to go catch our breath for a moment and check out. Recommend it. I think it's such a great practice and I'm more in the habit of it because of him. So very grateful to him for that. All right, y'all. That is your Glam Gal mission. If you are going to be going out and social interacting, I would love to see what your plans are. Share them with the group. Continue to stay in community because remember, confident women change the world and sometimes it takes a tribe of cheerleaders. The other part, diagram out a difficult conversation. What you said, what you meant, what we think the other person probably heard and what they made it mean. You can figure out where there was a breakdown. And then somewhere this week, and I really want you to report back, use strategic silence. I want to hear from y'all. Okay, let's dive into some coaching. All right, I'm going to start with a Q&A. Diane says, for the past 20 years, I've worn nothing but dark colors. How do I start to get back to colors and prints? Diane, I love this question because I think for a lot of us, it's like, okay, I get dressed, but how can I take it to that good to the better place, right? Janky, good, better. And then maybe stylish as fuck, I'm headed that way. Start with the accessories. I think it's a really easy way to sort of get your brain attuned to the fact that like you're up-leveling, you're okay, it's safe, it's fine. So you can introduce colors and earrings, you know, bracelets, necklaces. You can introduce prints on your shoes. You can start with like a bold color lip. And like we talked about in the beauty sequence last week, you can work your way up there too. Really, really, really small, small, small changes. But really, accessories are one of the best ways to start introducing color again, finding out what you like and playing with it. So I think it's such a great question. In our first meeting, you mentioned modesty. I'm still thinking about that. What does dressing modestly mean to you? Well, modesty will mean a lot of things to a lot of people. One of my best friends is recently converted to Islam. So she wears shayla, which is that veil over her head. And she wears an abaya, which is like the long, beautiful house coat that goes over her clothing. For her, that's modesty. I grew up in a type of Christian denomination where ladies can totally wear pants, we can cut our hair, but you don't show up to church with your cleavage showing or your booty hanging out. So that's more what modesty means to me. My father is part of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and the church that he belonged to really believed that women shouldn't wear any jewelry other than a watch and no makeup, and that their skirt length should be at their knee. So for everybody, that's going to be totally different. Over time, I have decided what modesty means to me. And really, like someone says in the chat box right now, it's just dressing appropriately for the occasion, whatever I make that mean. I don't make it a set rule. There are certain things that I probably won't do on Instagram. You're probably not ever going to see me in my undies. That doesn't mean I fault anyone or don't love it when I see women rocking crop tops in their undies, in their bikinis, in their bathing suits. Like, I love the shit out of that. And so you could tell I have a potty mouth, which a lot of people would consider immodest. Whatever it means to you, you can work the rules. The beautiful thing is we're all adults here. So even the modesty rules that you may have been handed at church or from your parents, your grandparents, the community around you, you get to rewrite them anytime you want, so long as they're in line with your own personal convictions. Love, love, love that. Okay, y'all. I'm going to jump into whoever wants to get coached live. Becky, you are up first. And for those of the rest of you who are not so brave yet, you want to make sure you raise your hand or put stuff in the Q&A box if you don't want me to miss it. All right, Becky, go ahead and unmute yourself and turn on your camera.
There we go. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How can I help you?
Hi. So I have a boss who is unkind, and I want to stick up for myself and intend to stick up for myself, but I never stick up for myself. And I could use some help with figuring out how to do that, especially when it comes to the fact that I have 4 children, and she often uses the fact that I am a working mother against me, almost as though that's a liability and makes me a bad employee. And I just struggle with sticking up for myself because she's can be so mean with it.
Okay, so tell me about your last interaction with your boss where she said something that you're calling mean. Tell me about that.
So, you know, I'm a manager, so I'm a professional. I work from home. We work a hybrid schedule. And she is very... She just brings up all the time that my children interrupt me at work, which they don't. They live here. We work from home. I mean, this is their home too. So at times they do sometimes open my door to my office, which I'm in now, and they will, you know, come in and I'll shoo them out the door. And it is maybe a 5-second interruption. And she'll say, you know, something along the lines of, Becky, you know, the expectation is that you have childcare, and I do have childcare. It's just that they are ages 7, 5, 3, and 2, and they are slippery and do sometimes sneak up the stairs when they're not being, you know, it's hard. They sneak up the stairs sometimes. And actually, they probably interrupt me less than she does gossiping at my desk when we're in the office. So she just is constantly bringing it up.
Okay. So tell me about
action.
Yeah. So Becky, the expectation is that you have childcare. Those are the words she said. And then what did you make that mean? What thought did you have about that?
So my thought is she's assuming I don't have childcare. So I always say, I understand. And I do have childcare. That's what I always say. Or what I end up doing, which is, I don't care that I do this in so many interactions, not just this one, but I apologize. Like, I apologize all the time. I always say, I apologize. You're correct. They got away from the sitter or from my husband because he watches them a lot. I apologize. They got away from them. I do have childcare. But it just, and the feeling too often is that I am being targeted for having children when others aren't, because there are other people who have children too, who I have spoken to,
okay,
who
come back get to me
this way.
Come back to me for a moment. So
yes,
she says, Becky, the expectation is that you have childcare. And then you think she's assuming I don't have childcare, but, and then you apologize.
Yeah.
So tell me about what the thought is that's driving you to apologize to her.
The thought is that she thinks I'm not doing a good job and that I'm not a good employee when I know I am.
So it's not even about assuming you don't have childcare. Your brain jumps to, she thinks I'm not a good employee.
Right, right.
Okay. All right. So she thinks I'm not a good employee. And how do you feel when you think that?
I guess, you know, I feel defensive, honestly, because I know I'm a good employee. I know I do a good job.
Okay. So I'm going to actually pull up a whiteboard because I want you to see your brain a little bit. So I use an electronic whiteboard, so everyone will be at the benefit of seeing this. So we have boss who says, Becky, the expectation is that you have childcare. Okay, those are the actual words she spoke, so we'll put them in quotes. And then you have the thought, she thinks I'm not a good employee.
Mm-hmm.
And then you feel defensive. I'm checking in. That's the right emotion, right? Defensive?
Yes.
Okay. And then you apologize. What else do you do when you're feeling defensive?
Well, I just internalize a lot. And I kind of just, I guess when I get defensive, I just think about it for a really long time and let it kind of affect my mood for even the rest of the evening. Sometimes I even will get mad at who, now I'm not mean to them, but in my mind, I'm mad at whoever was supposed to be watching the kids that allowed them to go upstairs, or even sometimes we'll get frustrated, not angry so much, but frustrated with the kids for opening the door when mommy has said, when the door is shut, you don't come in and you know that I am in a meeting. And so it's just when, again, they are children and they live in this house.
Okay. So tell me, how's your work life after she says this to you and you apologize? Like, what's work like after that when you're feeling defensive?
Well, I just kind of buckle down and like overachieve and like try to like prove that I'm the best manager that they've got, because there must be some sort of something that's causing her to think that I'm not. So I better work harder to make sure she knows that I am.
Okay. But I want you to see, she never actually used the words, you're not a good employee.
Mm-hmm. No, she didn't.
Right. You made the leap from the expectation and you're like, I'm not a good employee. And then you cause yourself to feel defensive, internalize it, apologize, and then buckle down to try and disprove the thought that you created.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So like the result of this line of thinking is you try to prove you're a good employee, which essentially you're using the definition of good employee, which you totally made up, against yourself.
Right, right.
Yeah. But I think too, even more poignant here, because I think what you seem to be bothered by is the fact that you're apologizing.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason you're apologizing is because you've leapt to the conclusion that you're not a good employee.
Right. Mm-hmm. True. Yeah.
And here's a thing I want to offer you, and for all of you on the call, because all of you will do this in some sort of interaction. Like, sorry, women do this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, why did you do that? Sorry. And it's like, dude, they're just asking, why did you do that? We jump to the part we have to apologize. Here's what I'll read. There's a difference between listening to someone and agreeing with them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's a difference between listening to the voice in your head, which jumps to the conclusion that you're not a good employee. And there's a difference with like agreeing with it. And you're agreeing with it. It's like a reflexive motion. Boss says something, I make it mean I'm not a good employee, and then I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, whoa, sister, what if we interrupted that thought when it pops up? Boss says words, mm-hmm. and I don't have to suddenly believe I'm not a good employee.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
See you nodding and thinking. Tell me what's going on.
Right. And I do agree with that. I do think that has been kind of my default, I guess, for pretty much any interaction where I feel like I'm being criticized, not just in work and just in life, is to apologize and work harder. Like, yeah. Okay. So I'll just work harder. I'll just do more.
Yeah. I'm a hustle for my self-worth, but tell me how that's been working out.
I don't sleep a lot. No, I am, and to be honest, like, in, oh, I am proud of that, actually. I am proud of how hard of a worker I am, because I am a damn hard worker. Like, nobody works harder than me. But that's exhausting too, you know? It's exhausting.
Well, and watch where your motivation to work is coming from. If it's coming from the belief, like, I work damn hard, I'm a fucking boss, and you're confident as fuck, and you're working from that place, totally different energy than, she thinks I'm a bad employee, defensive, let me hustle for my self-worth so I can prove the thought that I thought wrong.
Right, right.
Here's the thing. If we look at the think, feel, do cycle, you can't do enough to change your feeling state. That's not how it works. It's you have a thought which creates a feeling and you take action based on how you're feeling. So trying to do all this action to change how we're feeling is never going to work. It's a losing battle.
So, yeah. So I really need to change my feeling when she says that. Like, I need to change that part of it.
Well, it first starts with, if you want to change how you're feeling, it has to change how you're thinking. Mm-hmm. So I want you to start thinking in terms of that four parts of a conversation. Mm-hmm. Here's the words she actually spoke. Here's what I made it mean. Here's what I heard, and here's what I made it mean. And notice how different each of these are, because that's where you're going to get some agency back. You're like, why do I always jump to the conclusion that I'm not a good employee, or that X, Y, or Z? Why am I always agreeing with this person, or even making stuff up that they didn't even say?
Right, right. Right. And some of the making it up, like, that's just, some of that is from other interactions with her, which I won't even get into. But like, I totally agree with you. I think that I have kind of let this pattern emerge, because I've been working with her for, 6 years. And it's just kind of how I've learned to cope with that. So I 100%, I do see that.
Yeah. And here's the beautiful thing with every relationship. If it's like A plus B equals C, if we want to change C, we can't change A. Those are other human, but we can change B. We have total control over B. And that's how we start to change the dynamic. Like, this is one where, like, what if you practice like strategic silence? There's no apology needed.
Yeah.
Just play with it, but first clean up the thinking. So I want you to, like, every interaction you've had with her where your brain was like, she's so mean, I want you to go back, diagram that sucker out, figure out where the disconnect was, maybe where you made the leap, play with that, and start to reframe the thoughts you're thinking about yourself when your boss opens her mouth to say words in your direction. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. You got this, mama.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to put you back to an attendee. All right, I see stuff in the Q&A box. Okay, Andrea says, I've noticed in my last few interactions with the humans, I love that I'm exaggerating. In the moment, it gives me energy, but then I get in my car and I realize I was inauthentic. The thought I'm trying to think before I get out of my car is, I like myself. Oops, sorry, the chat box is covering the rest of it. I like myself when I tell the truth, but 5 minutes into the social setting, I've forgotten my commitment to authenticity. Okay, so my friend, I want you to also do the conversation diagram. And ask yourself, when someone's saying something to you, and then you have the action of telling a falsehood or exaggerating, what emotion are you having in that moment that's driving that action? Because is it energy that you actually want to have? Or is it like a little frenetic buzz feeling of anxiety? Because anxiety and excitement are close cousins. They're like different faces on the same card. So it's easy to switch from anxiety to what feels like excitement and back and forth. So that little buzz of energy that you're feeling, it might actually be anxiety. So notice, like, what feeling was I feeling when I started to say something false? Like, it's okay that you exaggerated. It's okay that you were inauthentic. Like, hello, fellow human. Welcome to the club. Happens to all of us. So instead of beating yourself up, I want you to get into evaluation mode. what was going on there in that interaction? Do I notice I do this with a particular person? What are my thoughts about them? Do I notice I do it in particular settings? What's going on in the setting? What are my beliefs about the setting that's causing me to feel this way to do this thing that I do? We need some more evaluation. And again, it's going to happen after the fact. That's okay. And it might take a lot of evaluating over time. Totally okay. But doing it once in a while and then sort of forgetting about it is not actually thought work. It's having a passing, like, little twiddle in your brain that never translates to any change, because we're not getting curious about what is going on when we're doing this. We're just sad that we did it. Huge difference. Getting curious will allow you to do an evaluation, figure out what was happening. If you're feeling shame or guilt, it's hard to get into an evaluative place. You might think about what was said, but not really do anything to change it. So you want to get to curious so you can evaluate, and then you'll start to see little shifts in your brain. Okay? This is for all of you. Whenever you have done something that you don't particularly want to do, having a passing thought that you didn't want to do the thing you did later on, not particularly helpful. But what is helpful is to get curious and to get into an evaluation mode. You do the same thing with your food plans. Start learning to do that with conversations that didn't go exactly according to plan. Thank you, Andrea. I love that question. All right, I'm going to go to my live folks. See who has their hand raised. All right, Shirley, I'm going to promote you. You are on deck, my friend. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. First of all, I'm loving your book. Thank you so much for writing it.
You're welcome.
My question is about clothes shopping.
Okay.
Because my daughter just got engaged. So I have literally been waking up in the middle of the night in sheer panic over shopping for a mother of the bride dress.
Okay.
I hate shopping. I do not know what dresses look good on me. I just can't figure it out.
Okay. So are those the thoughts that you're having when you're panicked, or is there some other thoughts that you're having then when you're feeling that panic when you wake up?
When I wake up and I'm feeling that panic, it's more that I pick something that doesn't look good and I just look ridiculous on the day.
Okay. So we're imagining that we're going to pick something and look ridiculous.
Yes.
Okay. That hasn't happened yet.
No.
But your brain doesn't know that.
No.
Right? Your brain is like, I'm reliving this moment where I've embarrassed myself over and over again. Like, of course it's feeling some panic, right? So
yes,
you just recognize what's going on. And like in those moments, reminding your brain, like, it hasn't happened yet. We're okay. Because it's hard to like figure out like the think, feel, do model that you might be in when you're feeling panic. So in those moments, try and bring your panic down by reminding your brain nothing bad has happened yet. There's no lion or bears or tigers chasing you. There's not a room full of people pointing at you and laughing. Like, none of that is occurring.
Yeah.
Even now, I can just say like, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me why you hate shopping so much.
I think it's my weight. You know, of course, I've set a goal to lose, probably not a realistic goal, which is probably a question for another coach. But, you know, so I just feel like I'm clearly never going to be a size two. That's, I'm sure, never going to happen. I'm just afraid that I'm not going to get to the goal I want to get to, and then I'm not going to be able to find something that looks good on me.
Okay.
So I'm trying to figure out how to be okay if I don't get to that goal and still find something that I feel confident and comfortable in.
Okay. Before we go there, I want you to notice you're already trying to be comfortable with anticipated disappointment.
It's true.
which is not a great place to go into any experience.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So what's that about?
I think because every time I've tried to lose weight, it either doesn't work or it comes back.
Okay.
You know.
And it, like, see you swallowing a little bit. How are you doing?
Sorry.
No, you're okay.
I just feel like this is important. It's our first child getting married. And like, I want her to be proud of me on that day. I want my husband to be proud of me.
A lot of pressure to put on a dress and yourself.
It is a lot of pressure on a dress.
It's giving the dress power it doesn't have. Like, if I find the right dress, the perfect dress, my daughter can be proud of me, my husband can be proud of me, and then maybe I'll let myself off the hook a little bit.
Right. You're right.
So what if we don't give our power to feel proud a way to dress? If you want to feel proud the day of, you're totally in charge of that.
Yep. I know I have a lot of thought work to do on it. I'm just not sure where to start with that to, you know, get me to that point.
Yeah. So if I'm hearing you to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, you want to feel proud on the day of, then what thoughts are you thinking now about yourself?
Probably not great ones. I'm getting there. I'm getting better. You know,
we're not here to like even judge. Remember, we all have a month from our starting point, and we have where we want to end up. So, if we want to end up at proud, where are we starting from?
Pretty disappointed in where I am right now.
So we're disappointed to proud. That's where we want to end up. So what's thoughts causing the disappointment?
Because I think I was probably not like a lot of people in this group. I was skinny my whole growing up. I was the skinny one in my family. Like, I could eat anything and never gain any weight until I hit like my mid to late 20s. And over the last few years, it's gotten much worse, and I've lost weight and gained it back, lost weight, gained it back. And I think I'm just disappointed in myself and not being able to keep that off. You know, a lot of times I don't want to go do things because I don't want to go out in public. So I just stay home instead.
Okay. So you're I want to make sure I understand the thought that's causing the disappointment is that you can't seem to get back to the weight you were when you were a teenager, or that you've gained weight and lost weight over time?
Gained weight and lost weight over time and keep gaining it back and not being able to, you know, keep the weight off.
Okay. And because you, in your mind, you haven't been able to keep the weight off, what does that mean about you as a human?
I failed.
Yeah. But failure's permanent.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, like, how do we know you haven't failed? Tell me all the ways we know you haven't failed.
Because I'm still trying.
You're on this call in front of all the people.
I'm still here.
Still here.
I mean, I just joined here in April, so, you know, and it has changed a lot of my thoughts about myself. And my husband says he can definitely see a big difference in my attitude. So I know I'm going in the right direction. I'm just, nervous about everything.
Well, and I want you to know, like, the thought you're attributing to the mother of the bride dress is a thought pattern you're used to having, which is like, I failed. I'm disappointed. Here's all the ridicule I imagine is going to occur.
Yeah.
But really, the worst thing that can happen here is what you say to yourself about the day of.
Right. Yeah.
But you have total control over. Like, the anticipated disappointment is your way of like sort of protecting yourself against the mean things you anticipate you're going to say to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If your body isn't X weight on X day. But this, right. this like system that you've set up for yourself, you lose regardless.
Right.
Giving your power away to a dress, giving your power away to the scale. Like nobody gets to dictate if you're going to feel proud the day of, but you.
That's true. I mean, I know I will feel super proud of her and I know her, she will be, you know, as happy as can be.
Proud of you.
Right. And yes, and she will be. She will be. I know that 100%. I just don't want to spend the day feeling self-conscious. Like, you know, what does this really look like on me?
Yeah, but again, you have total control over that.
True.
Like, just even notice, like, even I was talking about you being proud of you, and mm-hmm. you turned it external again. I want you to keep it internal.
You're right.
Yeah, you being proud of you on the day of. You have control over whether you feel self-conscious. Okay, so here's some thought work I want you to work on, my friend.
Thank you.
And then I'll give you some style work. And this is for all of you, right?
Okay, so perfect.
If we're disappointed and we want to go to proud, and those are the emotions, think of what emotions would ladder you to proud.
Okay.
From like disappointed to compassion. Mm-hmm. Compassion to curious. Curious to kindness. Maybe from kindness we could work our way to proud. Go back and rewatch this so you can kind of hear that again, okay?
I will, yes.
And then think of the thought that you would need to think to get from disappointment to compassion. From compassion to curious.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the thoughts you'll need to practice along the way.
Okay.
And notice before you go shopping, what feeling are you going shopping from?
Okay.
Are you trying to preempt yourself from saying nasty things to yourself? Well, you have total control over that.
Okay.
For signing to address the like ability of our family and friends and ourselves to feel proud of ourselves, and then we need to clean up that thinking before we ever try on a dress.
Right.
So it's going to color your whole experience.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. You've got that.
I'm with you so far. I'm with you.
Right. So clean up the thinking. And then when you go shopping, when you go dress shopping, I don't want you to factor in anyone's opinion but your own. So okay. Before you go polling everyone, I'm on to you, my friend.
Yeah, that's what I was worried about too.
Before you go polling everyone for their opinion, I want you to ask yourself, do I like this?
Okay.
Now, does it fit? Does it just so happen to fit? Okay, I guess I'll have to go with this one. No, that is not the question. Do I like this? Okay. That's number one before you ask anybody else their opinion. Okay?
Nope.
All right. You have your mission then.
All right. All right. Thank you.
You're so welcome. All right. Let me see. I saw some more questions come up. Okay. Hi, Judith. Do you have any ideas what to do if you carry your weight just on your stomach? Small plus size clothes fit on belly, but everywhere else is huge on me, but bust, legs, etc. I'm still maternity jeans and bras as the bra bands don't fit my small cup size. I am a B. I toned legs as I train a lot and do competitive hiking, so no jeans, even a laxit, seem to fit both bits. I just wear elastic tops and a skirt usually two sizes bigger than the top. I'm not sure what to do when I try on clothes. I get so upset about being out of proportion when I try on clothes. I'm also 170 down from 260, so I wasn't expecting these challenges. Okay, so you just have your weight distributed in your belly. Tons of women on this call can probably relate to you. So first of all, I want you to know, like, you're not a unicorn or out of proportion. You're just carrying your weight in your belly, like a lot of ladies. So a few things here, because there's a lot going on in this. So I want to give you at least some quick tips to kind of help you out. In terms of a small cup size, your B cup, I want you to check out Pepper and a Little Bra Company, because they are catered to women who have small cup sizes. Number two, it's okay that you're wearing elastic tops or, you know, maternity jeans right now. I think one of the most beautiful things is that you can work with your body and that there are all kinds of maternity jeans that might be accommodating and yummy on your tummy. Doesn't mean anything about you. If you thought of it as just like another line of clothing that happens to fit your body, as opposed to maybe couching it as maternity or, oh my gosh, my stomach, I'm out of proportion. Like, what if we like shut it down, shut that record out. Like another reframe is, this is just a line of clothing that happens to accommodate my belly. It's so yummy on my tummy. Thank God these jeans exist. So I can move and I can play. And as I lose some more weight, and perhaps that's the last place I'll lose it or the last place I'll lose interest, I'm not making it mean anything about me or that anything has gone wrong. So watch when you say you're out of proportion. How do you feel when you say that to yourself? Watch what you say when, in terms of like, what was the other thing that you said? That you weren't expecting these challenges. Just because they were unexpected challenges, again, doesn't mean that anything has gone wrong. It just means we're going to have to figure out what line of clothing works for your body. And guess what? That's every woman on the planet. You're not alone in that. I think those are some good questions. And I don't think you're alone in asking that. One of the other things, Katie, that we had talked about on the last call was there is a pair of pants at Eloquy that is geared towards women who carry their weight in their stomach. They're the Katie pant, and they come in these different types of like shapes, which is Viola fit, Geneva fit, and the regular fit. So I definitely recommend you go check out those trousers because they are specifically cut. One of the lines is cut for women who carry their weight in their belly. And you'll see pictures of models who probably have their weight distributed very similarly to your own. So it'd probably be good for your brain just to see bodies that look like yours. Okay. Do you have any tips, suggestions for controlling one's tone during the conversation? Yes. So one of the interesting things is, and I think lawyers are trained this way. So I'll just kind of tell you what one of my early sort of attorney mentors told me, because he had such a very cool modulated tone during trial. And what he did to kind of achieve that, and what I have learned from him and sort of adopted his way of speaking, was to really watch what I'm thinking as I'm speaking. Now, this takes time and can be a little uncomfortable because you're going to feel like, wait, what? So expect that it's going to feel a little funky monkey at the first. Totally okay. But it's okay sometimes as you're speaking to check in with yourself of what's going on with you. Like, has your heart rate picked up? Do you suddenly feel flushed and hot? Like, your body's going to send up little cues to you if you find that your tone starts to be really fast or really rapid pace and you want to bring it back down. Check in to see what's going on with yourself. Now, for some people, particularly some of those who are on the spectrum, they have trouble modulating their tone. My husband does this sometimes. He's speaking really loud and he doesn't even realize it. So I want you to know that some people, like with neurodiversity, your brain might work such a way that you have trouble modulating your tone. I don't want you to think anything's gone wrong or something's wrong with you or you don't have some ninja skill. Like, that just might be the way your brain works. And you can clue other people around you into the fact that sometimes I have trouble modulating the tone of my voice. It'll sound like I'm shouting at you. I don't mean to. Just let me know with a little signal if I've gotten really loud and you want me to bring it back down. Someone clues you in that maybe you're speaking a little louder than they're comfortable with. Don't make it mean anything about you. You can just bring it back down a notch. Totally okay. And keep on trucking. Where it becomes problematic a lot of times is someone clues you in that your tone has become rapid or loud and you didn't mean for it to, that you make it mean something about you. So I kind of want you to just, like, if you're making it mean something negative about you, that's the part you want to monitor, not so much the fact that they told you something. And I'm going to say this with a caveat, because women of color particularly come across this. A lot of times women of color are told that they're being loud, that they're being aggressive, and they're not. So if you are a woman of color and you are being told this, I want you to check in with yourself of like, have you actually been loud and you don't want to be? Or are you being loud because you want to be? And is the person across from you not realizing sort of the microaggression that they're speaking when they tell you to not be so loud or not be so aggressive? So every person's going to have different experiences because communication is kind of a funky business. Remember, it's what you said, what you mean, and then what the other person made it mean and what they actually heard, which we kind of have no control over as humans. So if someone tells you you're speaking in such a way that they don't like, you get to decide whether you want to listen to them politely but not agree, or whether you actually want to agree with them and modulate your tone. Either way, you have control over what you do in that scenario. You can listen without agreeing. Totally up to you. And it was a great question, Jane. It's something that I think about often, depending on, you know, the diversity and the intersection of the people in front of me and acknowledging my own intersections of being a woman of color, being, you know, a certain socioeconomic status, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, layers of intersection. Okay. Anonymous, don't worry, your name is not included here. I have the opposite problem from a lot of ladies you've coached. I don't hate clothes shopping. I love it. I spend too much money and time buying too many clothes that make me happy for a minute, but then just take up space. Since identifying this issue, I've been mindful of what I buy, but I am still buying almost as much as before, just justifying it with things like, well, this is slow fashion. It should last me a lifetime. Okay. First of all, Anonymous, I have a podcast episode about overspending that unfortunately I don't have the number for you of my own podcast, but definitely check out the Style Masterclass podcast on iTunes. Look up the one on overspending, and I think that's a really great place for you to start. Especially we have such little time left. I'm going to coach you as quickly as I can. Over-shopping is a form of buffering. Just like an overeat, an over Netflix, an over scroll, right? It's usually we're doing this behavior to avoid feeling a particular way. So what I want you to get really familiar with, because it sounds like you're kind of reflecting after the fact and you're onto yourself that you're justifying your purchases. So to up your game in terms of your thought work, I want you to start identifying, how was I feeling and what was I doing when I decided to shop? In fact, one of the best things I think you could do is use the No BS Discovery Worksheet to recap when you've happened to buy something that you didn't want to buy, when you went shopping and you noticed you got that little hit of dopamine and it didn't last very long, just like you ate something off plan and then that lovely feeling you were hoping didn't last very long. I want you to use the Discovery Worksheet to kind of evaluate what was happening for you when you purchased something that you didn't want to. And you can also create a shopping plan for yourself, just like you would, you know, in terms of your food plan, and use the Discovery Worksheet tool to see, hey, if I'm going off plan with buying clothes, what's happening there for me? What's going on with me that's causing me to take this action? What am I feeling? What am I thinking? What are the surrounding circumstances that I'm doing it in? Am I happy scrolling at night and then I'm purchasing things? I'm like, when did that happen? Am I fog shopping? So much fodder for great information about yourself. And I totally recommend you use a Discovery Worksheet. Okay, time is up. Just want to make sure. Okay, it was a viola fit, Jean. That was what it was, an Eloquy. All right, y'all. It's a pleasure always, 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 always to come here and chat with you all. I'm just falling in love with you all moment by moment. It's so amazing to be here. Remember what your mission is. Diagram the difficult conversations, practice some strategic silence. And if you are going to interact with the other humans anytime this week, I want to hear from you in the Facebook membership group. I want to see your social interaction plans. Tell us all how it went. If you use that strategic silence, report back. We all want to know you use that ninja skill. All right, y'all. Thank you so much.